This podcast covers all things health, your body, your brain, and your well-being. Each week, we'll be joined by doctors, as well as the occasional guest, to talk about the health topics that mean the most to you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Today's patient is a 33-year-old woman who's been reporting 6 months of worsening dyspnea on exertion. She lives in a three-story house and has recently noticed that when going from the basement to the top floor, she now has to rest at least 2 to 3 times. This was not true last year. She's had no fever, night sweats, or weight change. She thought these symptoms were because she's out of shape, but now she's getting worried because they seem to be getting worse. Her past medical history is unremarkable. Her only medication is an oral contraceptive. She drinks beer on the weekends, and she smoked 1 to 2 packs a day for about 10 years, but she stopped 2 years ago. And
here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We take this few seconds off to inform you, our valued loyal listener, about the best health and fitness podcast shows from the Nespod Studios. Join us as we give you the best of the best health and wellness updates you can rely on for the treatment of chronic health problems. Classic functional medicine, back to basics health tips, and special updates from the best doctors in the United States of America. Check out this health and wellness podcast shows. Explore Health Talk Weekly, Healthy Lifestyle Matters, Excellent Health Digest, Healthy and Free Daily, and last but not least, Weekly Health and Fitness Corner. Also, check out Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told fiction podcast, for that real life on the go experience with the 27-year-old golden boy who made our guest invite number one list. He tells us about his story as it happens in real time and in real life. It's Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told. Go get a load of that happiness, because happiness is healthy as we know it. Join us every week as we continue to provide you the best of health and fitness wellness updates from around the globe. Enjoy the show.
Now vapes. She has a strong family history of emphysema and COPD, including in two of her brothers. On physical examination, she's relatively normal, including a resting room air saturation of 97%. Her lungs are clear, her heart has no jugular venous distension, she has no murmurs, but she does have an accentuated pulmonic component of her second heart sound. She does not have jugular venous dilation or peripheral edema. Let me stop here and let's get some of your initial thoughts.
Well, first, I agree with her. Worsening dyspnea on exertion is often a hallmark of cardiopulmonary disease, so we should not write it off. And I also noted the loud P2, which can suggest pulmonary vascular disease. She has a pretty impressive smoking history, and she's taking oral contraceptives. It really doesn't sound like asthma, but the strong family history of COPD also has my attention. And you didn't mention any congenital heart or lung disease that might be relevant in this young woman. I would like to at least get some basic laboratory examinations. I also want to make sure she's not anemic, her liver function's not impaired. And then basic testing, including a chest x-ray. She should have PFTs and an echocardiogram.
Okay. Well, her chemistries, including her liver function, are normal, as is her CBC. Her chest x-ray does not show any hyperinflation or infiltrates, but her right pulmonary artery does appear to be dilated. Her PFTs show no obstructive ventilatory defect or restrictive ventilatory defect, but her DLCO is moderately reduced. An echocardiogram shows a small left ventricle with a normal left atrium. She has a moderate right ventricular hypertrophy and an estimated right ventricular systolic pressure of 40.
There are some features that are suggestive of pulmonary hypertension. So in any patient with suspected pulmonary hypertension, it's vital that you include the bubble study as part of the echo to look for an intracardiac shunt.
And since she's normoxic at rest, we're thinking of a left to right shunt from an ASD or VSD, right?
Yeah, and as we've discussed, that can lead to eventual pulmonary arterial hypertension. But these studies have made disorders that could cause these indolent symptoms, such as COPD, liver disease, renal disease, and anemia all less likely. The echo is leading us to think more about pulmonary hypertension.
Okay, before we move on, let's quickly go through the classification of pulmonary hypertension, and because that's going to help with the differential diagnosis, I think.
All right, so type 1 pulmonary hypertension is pulmonary arterial hypertension. That's characterized by marked pulmonary arterial precapillary remodeling. Type 1 can also be associated with congenital heart disease, with intracardiac shunt, connective tissue disease, portal hypertension, and HIV. Type 2 is pulmonary hypertension due to left heart disease. Type 3 is due to parenchymal lung disease, such as emphysema or pulmonary fibrosis. Type 4 is chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension. And type 5 is just about everything else. So that can include hematologic disorders like sickle cell, can include sarcoidosis, renal dialysis, schistosomiasis, and fibrosing mediastinitis.
Okay, for this question, let's assume that the bubble study is negative. There's no intracardiac shunts. The question's asking, which of the following is the most likely cause of her pulmonary hypertension? Option A is asthma. Option B is chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension. Option C is heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. Option D is heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. And option E is scleroderma.
Let's take a step back for a moment because this case illustrates the important point that it's often hard to diagnose pulmonary hypertension unless you're thinking about it. The presentation is typical in that her symptoms were very indolent and there was nothing obvious on physical exam. People tend to write off symptoms such as dyspnea on exertion and fatigue, which are the earliest symptoms. But once the pulmonary hypertension is advanced, you get things like jugular venous distension, peripheral edema, or syncope. I do credit the examiner for hearing the accentuated P2, which is typically found.
So which of the choices do you think is going on in our patient?
Well, the best answer you've given me, although not common, is chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension or type 4.
Why is that?
First, remember that the most common causes of pulmonary hypertension overall are either type 2, which is the secondary to left heart disease, or type 3, which is secondary to primary lung disease. So in this case, the echo is key because with a normal left atrial size, it's highly unlikely that her pulmonary hypertension was due to heart failure with either reduced or preserved ejection fraction. So we can eliminate those two options from the answer choices. Both of those would have led to a dilated left atrium. The negative chest x-ray, spirometry, and lung volumes also rules out type 3 due to primary lung disease.
But what about she had a reduced DLCO?
That's often typical in type 1 and type 4 pulmonary hypertension, and it's likely due to the reduced blood volume in the lung. That can be another tip-off in a patient with symptoms.
And I'm assuming that you're ruling out asthma and scleroderma from the history and the physical exam.
Yeah, asthma should be episodic and provoked by things like allergens or a cold, and she really has nothing on exam or history consistent with scleroderma.
Okay, then let's talk a little bit about chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension or type 4.
The development of pulmonary hypertension after chronic thromboembolic obstruction of the pulmonary arteries is termed CTEPH. It's well described and now carries its own type, number 4, as I mentioned before. So the incidence following a single pulmonary embolic event is difficult to determine accurately, but it's probably between 3 and 7% of patients. Importantly, 25% of patients with CTEPH have no history of clinical venous thromboembolism. So it suggests that this may develop following a subclinical pulmonary embolism or through a diverse range of mechanisms. But it's important to distinguish CTEPH from type 1 or pulmonary arterial hypertension because the best treatment is surgery at an experienced center.
And how would you distinguish between type 1 and type 4? The echo in this patient could have been either, right?
Yeah, you need either a high-quality contrast CT scan or pulmonary angiogram, but traditionally the gold standard is a VQ scan. In CTEPH, there is segmental perfusion defects, whereas in type 1 pulmonary hypertension, you'll not have these defects.
Great. Well, the teaching points in this case are that pulmonary hypertension remains a diagnostic challenge as it can afflict a wide array of people and present with indolent, nonspecific symptoms. It's usually detected on an echocardiogram, which is also helpful in ruling out some of the causes. Chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension, or type 4, presents similarly to type 1, or pulmonary arterial hypertension, and can be distinguished with a VQ scan.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you. This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.